Thank you for having us. It's our pleasure to be here. And I'm going to be very brief. I'm going to kind of set the tone and the context for the work that we, some of the work that we've done in Illinois, and then my colleagues will take it from there. So I think the reason that I am here is because I used to run the State Department of Public Health for Illinois up until about 7 weeks ago, and had the charge of putting together an evaluation of this managed care pilot that we were running in Illinois. So just a little bit of history and how we got there. Illinois, as you know, is the fifth largest state in the nation. We have approximately 13 million people, and we have many, many, many people on Medicaid. We also have a big, huge deficit. We're the only state that has that, right? Just kidding. In fact, our Medicaid budget was in going into FY13 was $2.7 billion in the hole. Not million, $2.7 billion in the hole. So we have a real crisis, and we also wanted to provide better health care and better outcomes for our residents. So about 18 months ago, the General Assembly decided that we needed to do something and that we would start by looking at managed care, integrated care, as a way of, I don't want to put words in the mouth of our General Assembly, mostly cost savings, but for those of us in public health and those of us that care about health, also looking at better health outcomes. So we saw it as an opportunity to save the state some money, which we didn't really have a choice, we have to do that, but also look at more non-traditional partners and look at the people that were really costing the state the most money and not actually having good health outcomes. So if we were paying a lot of money and they were having great health outcomes, that might be a different story, but they were not having great health outcomes. So we obviously looked at economic efficiencies, and we wanted to save the state about $200 million over the next 5 years. And that got us started into this managed care discussion. New focus on prevention, obviously not new to those of us working in public health, but maybe new to other agencies in the state that were really just focused on paying the bills. Our Medicaid agency, the Illinois Department of Health Care and Family Services, is one of our largest, if not the largest agency in the state, and is really focused on paying the bills. So really working with multiple agencies, interagencies, Health Care and Family Services, as well as the Department of Public Health, and our super agency, the Illinois Department of Human Services, to look at how we developed an integrated care pilot and focused more on community integration. Governor Quinn, since he's been in office, has really made one of his goals to try to move more people from segregated institutions, people with disabilities, into communities. It's been very challenging. We're not done. We just started. But as I was sharing with some colleagues, for those of us that have been in the disability field and advocacy world for a long time, it's been a long time waiting to have an administration that actually wants to do this. They may not necessarily know how to do it, but at least they're partnering with individuals who know how to do it to try to push for more integration. And so we also knew that we had to deliver health services in a different way if we wanted to achieve that. So kind of that kind of sets the context for what happened. Okay. So the pilot was identified to be rolled out in the collar counties of Chicago, so not Cook County. How many of you are familiar with Chicago, Illinois, a little bit? So these are surrounding counties, and there are approximately 40,000, I think a little under 40,000, 38,000, 39,000 individuals with disabilities accessing and other needs accessing Medicaid. And so this was a pilot to look at how do we enroll them in managed care. So we wanted to move from traditional Medicaid fee-for-service, you go out and you find a provider, sometimes very challenging to find a provider, and the state identified two managed care organizations, Aetna and Illini Care, through a very rigorous, you know, RFP process, took many, many, many months to do. And these two entities were charged in establishing medical homes and care coordination. And we also wanted to roll it out in phases. We knew we couldn't do it all at once. So phase one was acute health, is acute health. We're in the midst of doing this now. Phase two is looking at how do you provide managed care for those who need long-term supports, living in nursing homes perhaps or other facilities, with the exception of people with developmental disabilities. And phase three would be to enroll individuals with developmental disabilities. So we are in phase one, just now starting maybe phase two, and phase three, we're a little bit behind. For those of us working to try to figure this out, I think we're okay with that because we wanted to make sure that we learn from the process and that we are able to move forward effectively and make some changes. Now, remember I said the General Assembly passed a law that 50% of our individuals would be in a managed care. So this evaluation of this pilot is not to say whether we're going to do this or not. It's really to inform the process in moving forward. So we do think it's very valuable and very important. So a couple things that are a bit unique, I think, and interesting. The agency that is charged with rolling this out is the Illinois Department of Healthcare and Family Services. So when we were talking about an evaluation, we realized at the state level that it would not be good for that agency to evaluate themselves. That's usually not the way it works. Sometimes it's obviously there's different components. So the Illinois Department of Public Health was charged with putting the evaluation team together, and hence why I'm here and my colleagues from UIC are here. So this is a multi-agency, inter-agency collaboration between pretty large elephants in Illinois. So that's been a bit challenging. And the other thing that we wanted to do is we wanted to have a voice of the advocates, people with disabilities. There was quite a bit of resistance, as you can imagine, to managed care in Illinois, and we've heard that that's common in other states as well. So we put together about a 10 to 15 member advisory council that was actually appointed by the governor's office that has been commissioned to inform the evaluation team. And we actually have been meeting with the evaluation team pretty regularly. They've given input on everything from instrument design to evaluation design to helping us go out into the community and recruit participants for the evaluation. So I think that's a very nice, unique aspect of our managed care rollout and will continue into the future. Did I miss anything? Okay. I will turn it over to, I think, Dr. Helen. Oh, sorry, Dr. Owen. Do you want me to? Yes. Sure. I can do it. Thanks. Pull it a little closer to you, I think.
Okay, so I just want to introduce our evaluation and the different components of what we're doing. We are using a very participatory. So we're using a participatory process where we get input from stakeholders all along the way, and we're using both quantitative and qualitative data, looking both at a process evaluation, so we're mostly looking at that MCO capacity, looking at what capacity companies that are running managed care actually have to make an impact, and we're also doing an outcome evaluation. We're really looking both at Medicaid counter data and some quantitative care issues, but we're also doing a consumer survey, which is the focus of the research.
Today.
Yep, today is research that we're presenting. The aims of this research are to examine unmet healthcare needs and healthcare satisfaction among adults with disabilities on Medicaid, and also to compare differences in unmet healthcare needs and healthcare satisfaction between adults with developmental disabilities, mental health, and physical disabilities. And then I want to describe the survey design of the consumer survey that we used. So we did use part of the CAPS that Ray just talked about, but we also combined the CAPS with some more customized indicators for people with disabilities. So we used parts of the Apple, and then we included that set for the brain model, and we included scales of activities of daily living and the instrumental activities of daily living. And we did this in a very participatory process. So we designed surveys, and then we went out and went to state policymakers and also to the MCO staff and got their input on the survey and what we could do better. And then after we did some more customization, actually went to groups of people with disabilities to do public testing and then further reform that survey that we actually used. And the survey distribution. So we originally set out 2,195 surveys to sample. We cut down our number that we included in the final sample to about 1260 FM. We had a lot of return to senders and praise. People that we just could not reach, and we really only felt that we had a chance to reach 1,216 of them. So we got 498 responses out of that, and that increased to about 34.4% response rate. And we had special difficulties reaching people who lived in nursing facilities. Just either they didn't get their mail, or they couldn't return them, or whatever it was, so we had many challenges with that. And then the next slide goes through some of the demographics. And I compared the demographics of the survey that we got there on the right with Illinois, the population that are in those areas. And the gender differences weren't significant. The race was significant only because survey respondents were grouped into this very large other category. If we remove other than the differences in the race, they disappear. The age is about the same. Ethnicity, we didn't do so well at collecting information from people of Hispanic status. And we had this very well called the ICP group, which is how the state classify people into different groups if they're in community residences, or if they're in nursing facilities, IDUAs, and so forth. And we did very well at getting response back from people in the community, and like I said before, we didn't do so well getting them back from the nursing facilities, so that was a significant difference. And then finally, for today's purposes, we found that 75% of people in the ICP groups were identified as being community residents. And that didn't really lend itself to making community comparisons. So instead we looked at their self-reported disability within the service, within the survey. And we broke people down into this intellectual disability group. And there were 144 people in there, and then 107 people in the mental health or substance abuse group, and 125 people with physical disabilities, which did include people with visual or hearing impairments and also brain injuries.
A couple of comments more about the survey. It was a challenge in many ways because you often don't see all these different groups combined in one study. The one group that was particularly concerned was the mental health group, that we would be sensitive to their needs, and I know in early versions they were concerned about that, so that needed some extra attention. And also the fact that for some of the groups, particularly around developmental disabilities, we had to also have an option of informant because in many cases for people with more severe cognitive disabilities, you need to have that informant aspect. And we also worked with, when we knew they were in group homes or some kind of residential program, to try and get to work with their somebody in the home or home manager to help with the surveys. So that was some of the ways that we got more people to respond. Oh, is this going backwards?
Just go.
You hit this one?
Yep, okay. One more. Okay.
This one.
Yep.
Okay. One of the things that we looked at was the health status using the RAND 12 scores. And as you would expect, people with physical disabilities had poorer health. And this was, you know, self-reported health. And as you would expect, if you look at mental health, people with mental health issues had lower mental health. So this is just to show you that worked pretty well. I mean, one of the challenges is to keep the survey really short, and this was the shortest way we could get mental health and physical health. And then You know, we're hoping to do this over a few years, so we're going to continue to monitor this. So this is just the baseline. When they were just before they got into this managed care. And so you can also see with overall health that the best health was for people with intellectual disabilities. We also looked at activities of daily living and instrumental activities of daily living, and that's something you typically don't see on these, for example, on a CAP survey, and we felt that this was important to be able to know that. And again, you can see that there are differences between the groups, and certainly the ADL is highest with the mental health, and you can also see that the IADLs, for example, are lowest with people with intellectual disabilities. In terms of, that moves quickly. Access to health, access to health services. The one area that had the, we looked at unmet needs. So we looked at if they said that they had a need for something and they weren't getting it. And as you would expect, dental health was the one that had the most unmet health needs, and that's before they even changed some of the criteria in Medicaid very recently. And unfortunately, that's one of the areas that's been cut in terms of what the state of Illinois is going to provide in Medicaid. Now, one of the interesting aspects, at least in the short run, is that the managed care companies are going to keep by what they promised initially in regard to dental care. So they may actually provide better or more access to dental care than people who are not in these managed care programs because they made a commitment to it at least for a while. So that's going to be an interesting one. But that one was, you know, about a third of the people reported that they had a need for dental care and weren't getting it. So.
Behavioral counseling.
Behavioral counseling, dental. I can barely read it.
Dietitian.
Dietitian. Home health. OT.
Personal assistance.
PT. Speech. And substance abuse. Sorry about that. Trying to squeeze too much into one.
And speech was the only one that was significantly different. People with ID had more unmet speech needs.
You just touched this thing. I will read these two also. Access to specialty services unmet. We've got allergists, cardiologists, psychiatrists, psychologists, rehab, physical medicine, skin doctor, surgeon, and other. And the psychiatrist, you will see that, as you would expect for the mental health group, that the main differences was that they reported more unmet needs for psychiatrists and psychologists, so in the mental health area. What I think was the most interesting was around the area of preventative care, and I'm going to read these to you again. Discuss healthy eating, discuss exercise, being weighed, discuss emotional health, discuss birth control, and discuss STD. Now, what you'll notice, it wasn't too bad in terms of the sexual issues, the birth control and the STDs, but it was really horrible when you look at the other preventive areas, and particularly if you look at being weighed, and you'll see that among people with physical disability, only 12.8% said they were being weighed when they went to the doctor. And that goes really nicely with something, I don't know if nicely is the right word, but it's similar to the findings we heard earlier that Mary Breslin reported around the fact that only 3.6% of the primary care physicians' offices that were surveyed in California that were serving people with disabilities had a scale. So, you know, that's pretty major given the obesity crisis that we've been hearing about. The other thing is that very few discussed healthy eating, and very few discuss exercise. And so, and this is before getting into managed care, so maybe we'll see some differences. We'll have to see what happens in regard to this particular aspect. But I think this is interesting when you look at how low that is. I was actually surprised how much they do talk to them about birth control, but that was really high. Okay. In terms of satisfaction with overall health care, you can look here, and in terms of overall satisfaction, and the percent who were satisfied did differ somewhat from groups, but if you look, that the group in mental health was the least satisfied in general. So what are the implications of this? One is for sure is the increased need for preventative care. The second is the dental care. And the third would be the psychiatric services for the mental health group. And I will say in regard to the mental health that in the early years or in the beginning of the transitioning to this program, the group that really complained the most was the mental health group, and particularly those who had drug abuse, and there were some issues around that. That some of that has smoothed to some extent. Integrated care has the potential to improve preventive care by its emphasis on prevention. I want to tell you about next steps. What we've been able to do is we've been able to expand the sample. We included 380 persons in the longitudinal group, and we've gotten quite a few of those back. We're able to look from baseline to a year later. But what we also did was distribute to another group, which is a group in Chicago who did not get the integrated care, and so we're going to be able to compare. Obviously, we're going to have to control for certain differences and demographic aspects. And we also picked up another sample of people in the integrated care so we can have more to look at. Now, we only talked about the survey at this point, but we're looking at Medicaid data over a period of a couple years for 140,000 people, including people, yeah, that's quite a lot of data, including people who have received the integrated care and those who haven't. We're also looking, we've had extensive focus groups with over 100 people involved in the focus groups, and we've been meeting with the MCOs to get their side of the story and also meeting with providers in the advisory group. So there's quite a lot of data that we're dealing with and looking at. And in our follow-up survey now also has questions around long-term services and supports, looking at community participation, looking at satisfaction with those aspects, looking at employment and some quality of life type information. So we're going to have a lot of comprehensive data. I would like to just say a few things about some of the results that we have so far that really concur very much with what we heard earlier about California. I asked Mary Breslin, I said, I could just take your slides and just show them, and those will be really similar results in terms of looking at. But the biggest issue has really been the provider network. And the provider network, especially in the beginning when they first started the program, was really quite poor, actually, the provider network. And it's gotten quite a bit better over a period of a year. And I know that one of the issues is that a lot of providers didn't want to sign up. And so that's been one of the most challenging aspects and when you're looking at continuity of care. And that's something that, you know, the more these programs can sign up the current providers, and it's going to be a lot smoother. Okay.